Aloha! You are listening to Inside the Desert Oasis Room, episode number 60. This episode is sponsored by Tandawai Rum. Established in the Philippines in 1854, Tandawai is one of the world's largest rum producers and winner of over 170 international medals in the past four decades, including Brand of the Year in London's World Branding Awards Rum category from 2015 to 2017 and Rum Brand Champion of the World by thespiritsbusiness.com in 2015. As sponsor of the Inside the Desert Oasis Room podcast and the toast to Master Ninja Ray Buen at the legendary Tiki T in Los Angeles, California, Tandawai is the perfect companion to celebrate all things tiki. For more information, check out their webpage at tandawaiusa.com or follow them on Facebook or Instagram at tandawaiusa. This podcast is also sponsored by the Royal Hawaiian. Founded in Laguna Beach, California in 1947, the Royal Hawaiian is South Orange County's premier tropical drink and dining destination. Come try their signature cocktail, the Lapu Lapu, a delicious combination of tropical fruit juices with a generous float of dark spirits. Or other island-inspired favorites like ahi tuna poke or the dynamite crab-crested mahi mahi. Enjoy their delicious brunch or drop in for happy hour from 2:30 to 5:30 p.m. daily for drink specials and more. To make a reservation, visit RoyalHawaiianLB.com. On this episode, we chat with Blair Reynolds. Blair is the man behind BG Reynolds Premium Syrups. He tells us how he transitioned from working a corporate IT job running a help desk to making a living through entrepreneurship, pursuing his passion in cocktails and mixology. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we did bringing it to you. This podcast is a grassroots effort and does not survive without the help of our sponsors or our listeners. So if you have a product, business, or event that you'd like to promote, stop by DesertOasisRoom.com and send us a message. We have sponsorship packages in all sizes to fit your needs. Okay, let's get into this. Here's our chat with Blair Reynolds. I hope you enjoy it. Hey, Blair. This is Adrian.
How's it going, man?
It's going good. How are you?
All right. It's another beautiful day in Portland.
Awesome. Awesome. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
I have to start by apologizing that I've got a gravelly voice because I'm just getting over a cold.
Oh, no.
So, I appreciate you being on the show.
Yeah, no, I'm glad to be.
Awesome. Let's start with... I want to start with how we met. Do you remember that?
Gosh. You know, it's... I can't even remember, I'll be honest.
That's fine. You know, like, because for most of the TV
people... As early as the early 2000s?
It was. And what I was going to say, most of us Tiki people don't even remember how, you know, I don't remember how I met most of my Tiki friends. I remember how I met you. I met you at one of the earlier bus crawls up in San Francisco. And you had blonde hair at the time.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
No, we all go through these phases.
I went through that phase myself. I've had blonde hair in the past too, believe it or not. Twice. You know, when I was in my 20s and I was hitting nightclubs and stuff, you know, I thought it would be cool to do my hair. I bleached it all out and... You know, it was fun. I got a lot of attention when I was going out, and everybody wanted to get drunk with me. And then, you know, later on, I thought, okay, it's time to, you know, let this one go. I dyed it black again because as it was growing out, you know, you had the black roots, but I had to let it grow back out because the bleach just killed my hair, right?
Oh, yeah, it does.
And then when I hit my 30s, I went through this kind of, I don't know, like, I wouldn't say it was a midlife crisis, but I felt like my youth was slipping. So I went and I bleached my hair again. So, yeah.
And then you find out all that bleach is going to really help with the youth slipping by your hair just going away.
Right. Wow. Yeah. So, I gave all that up. But you know, I have pictures. It was fun.
Yeah, I had one point I dyed my hair, all of it, including my eyebrows and goatee, bright pink.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was a interesting phase of my life. I think I was just kind of trying to find something different, unique, and interesting. I was bored.
Yeah, yeah.
Not enough going on, and I'll end up with, you know, some sort of weirdly dyed hair.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll be doing that again. There's a lot less hair to dye these days.
Yeah. Yeah, and plus, at our age, we would look ridiculous doing that, right?
Yeah, at a certain point, you have to say, okay, I'm not up in the club. I'm the kind of guy who's in bed by 9 p.m.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah,
as quick as I can get the kids down.
I'm at an age now where I'm always looking at the clock, wondering, like, can I go home now? I just want to curl up with a cat and turn on the Netflix, you know, and just lay in my bed and veg out the rest of the night, so...
Oh yeah, I've had party invites. They've stopped coming more recently, but hey, we're going to go meet at this place at about 10 p.m. You want to go? No, I will be in my bed.
Yeah, you're fine, right? You're like, I'm okay.
Yeah, I've got small children. They wake up around 6:30 a.m. and I just want to get ahead of them, so I need that time.
Right.
You know, to at least get the coffee started.
Right, that's funny. Well, I want to talk to you about a couple of different things. You know, one of the things that fascinates me is how some of the people that do what they do is not where they originally started. And when you and I first met, I believe that you were working in, like, the IT industry or something, weren't you?
Yeah, I was actually working, let's see, in 2003, I would have been working probably at Blanc & Otis in San Francisco, just a PR firm, and I was doing their IT support, and, you know, the tiki thing was something I was dabbling in as a great, you know, with great enthusiasm and interest, because it was so encompassing, you know, rather than just a cocktail, it was like cocktail and an environment and music and all these great people and clothing, and I was just like, wow! So I was working in an IT background at the time. Help desk, managing computers and installations and such. I actually had a kind of an epiphany that year, I think just after the crawl, where I was at a point and I said, is this what I want to be doing? I think we were actually on a work retreat. I remember we went canoeing. And I thought, wow, this guy that we're going with just does this. I mean, mind you, the guy was probably like 17 years old doing this in summers.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't think that deep at the time. But I was like, wow, so you can have a job doing awesome, amazing things as opposed to being, you know, stuck in a queue helping people figure out their password for the 20th time that week.
Right.
And that was kind of a, like, wow, maybe I could do something different. Maybe I don't have to fall down just this career path. And I think that really started getting the gears turning into my kind of my next steps.
You know,
towards
where you are today. Came from a tech background also. I know exactly what you're saying about helping people with passwords and working a help desk, because I was in the same boat. You know, I would come in every day and I was, you know, the first thing you would do is check your tickets, right? You'd have we would have a ticketing system where every time somebody called the help desk, they'd open a trouble ticket and those tickets would get assigned. And that was my day, was basically fixing every person, you know, putting out fires, right? And
yeah. Oh yeah.
So soul sucking, you know, and I also wanted to have a way out, but I thought, oh, I went to school for this, and you know, this is my career. You know, like, you make good money when you're working in tech, but then, you know, there's something else that you give up, you know, for that. And and I remember I coincidentally was traveling through Portland on business when I bumped into you outside of Trader Vic's.
And
I remember you saying to me, you know, yeah, I'm going to be leaving this cushy job to open my own bar. And I'm kind of scared. And and I was like, yeah, you know what? Everything's going to work out, man. You're going to be fine. And but I know what you're what you were going through then, because when you have the big tech job, when you're working for a big company and you've got the benefits and paid vacation time and 401k and a stable paycheck, you know, it's hard to give all of that up, you know?
Yeah, and that took a lot of, it seems a lot of us, and I've been going through a lot of, life study recently. A lot of us seek comfort. The first thing we seek is comfort. I don't want to be out in the weather. I want to be inside my house. I don't want to be doing something challenging. I want to be watching TV. I just want to seek comfort wherever I can. And the second that you put your foot over the edge of that cliff, hoping there's a step below, you start to work in a different way. You stop seeking pure comfort and you work on, well, what can I do to improve myself? What can I do to improve my situation? What can I do to, move forward? And there's kind of this, when you're in that 9-to-5 world, it's kind of like, well, if something happens, I can always go on unemployment and find another job. Although right. Maybe in this market, that's not as easy. But once you're kind of holding your fate in your own hands, it really becomes a matter of keeping the ball rolling, or else it's going to collapse.
Oh, completely, yeah.
Yeah, it's very challenging, and it requires you to adapt pretty fast. You can't just kind of, I remember days, working in IT where I would show up, pretty much browse the web for majority of the time, just enough time to skate by and look like I was doing well.
Yep.
And then clock off. But man, once you're in control of your own destiny, you really have to keep going, because it's a choice between, well, I can take this whole week off and just relax, but that might lead to catastrophic failure.
With this podcast, it keeps me super busy. I've worked harder now than I ever did in my life. I'm putting in long days. And if I actually, I don't know if this is good or bad, but as somebody that is now, I don't know if entrepreneur is the right word, but as somebody that is self-employed, if I slack off for an hour during the day and I'm not productive, I feel like I'm losing money,
Yeah.
Because I could be putting that hour towards something that generates income, right? Whether it's recording a new episode or editing or marketing or whatever it is, right?
Yeah. And you do have to seek, it can twist the other way. You can start getting to the point where you're up at 5 in the morning because, oh man, if I don't get this website change done, then this whole thing is just going to explode. So you can kind of get into the other aspect of it. So finding that kind of balance where you're doing... doing what you have to, but not driving yourself up the wall. Finding enough time for, your personal health, getting enough sleep, getting, a little bit of exercise, movement.
Right.
So that,
talking about all of this, coming from the corporate world and being this independent person that you are now, was this something that, tell me about your path. Tell me how you went from working a help desk to making syrups.
Yeah. So I was working, I had started in IT help desk and other various functions, quality assurance. Actually worked for a brief time in the video game industry, which was kind of awesome, kind of horrifying. You get to play video games, but they're not the video games you want to play.
Okay.
Found out about the world of Tiki through a friend of mine. Just started to get fascinated. I already had a light interest in, kind of vintage cocktails and, cocktails and bartending being, kind of a cool hip thing to get into. But Tiki really, took all that, threw it into a Disney world and just so much to explore, so much history, so much joy. And it really started, to become a passion of mine, really a fascination, really something I could really sink my teeth into. And, as I said, I had that kind of epiphany over a work retreat. I kind of decided, well, where am I going to go from here? What am I going to start doing? As I started to get more interested in, you know, in cocktails and learning more about it and learning more about the kind of the cocktail revolution that was going on at the time, I started thinking about, hey, maybe there's, you know, some employment opportunity or something that I could do that actually, you know, fulfills this passion. So I'm not just, spending my money from my work day on my booze collection, but actually, you know, really learning, growing, and changing by applying my passion professionally.
Right.
So I started, actually it first started off as me just being really passionate, started blogging just so I could chat with a community of other bloggers. Moved from there, I just was frequenting a lot of the bars here in Portland, and one of them, Teardrop, which is kind of the center of the Portland cocktail revolution, I got to be very familiar, got to be good friends with the owner, and he said, hey, did you want to host a tiki night here on a slow night? And I said, jumped at the opportunity, just yes.
Yeah.
So we got the ball rolling and confused a lot of people who were there for Teardrop service.
Right.
But I got the opportunity to, you know, set drinks on fire, and, you know, people were enjoying, Leilani volcanoes and volcano bowls the way they were made, you know, meant to be made. It really started to get kind of the tiki scene here in Portland rolling, a little bit of interest, because the cocktail scene started to get a little taste of what we were doing, thanks
to
hosting a Teardrop. I moved from doing those nights into, I got a job bartending, not at a great tiki palace, but at a little New Orleans restaurant, New Orleans style restaurant, and a few other places over the years. Finally ditched my IT job ditched me at one point.
Okay.
I said, well, I guess I'm on my own two feet from here on.
Yeah.
So I did my bartending thing, and it was
So you were actually bartending at night while you were working your IT job during the day?
Yep.
Okay.
It was a great way to make a little extra cash, and instead of, you know, sitting at home drinking the night away,
right,
I could help others do so. I really saw that I could build a passion into a profession. There's your quotable.
Okay.
So my help desk, you know, my IT job went away in the form of an empty FedEx box for my laptop one day. So I decided to just keep going with the bartending thing and, you know, pick up a few shifts here and there and figure out what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one night on a shift at another little bar, I was talking with somebody who was the editor for one of our cocktail magazines here, and she was like, "Ah, I love making these cocktails, but they always require all these crazy ingredients. You gotta have to make them yourself. You end up with a gallon of the ingredient, and you don't even know if it tastes the way it should. You don't even know if the cocktail that you're gonna be making tastes good."
Right.
And I thought, wow, somebody really ought to do something about that. And then, you know, big exclamation point, light bulb, whatever you want.
That could be you.
That could be me.
That could be you.
I've been making syrups for years now. I've been telling people how to make their syrups on my blog.
Right.
I've been making them behind the bar, gotten great reception, and, you know, decided to, you know, start putting my feet forward. I had a little extra time during the day, thanks to my day job going away.
Uh-huh.
And I start to just kind of started Googling, you know, food industry. How do you get into the food industry? How do you make things and put them on a shelf? And that's when I found what's called a co-manufacturer or a co-packer.
Okay.
And that's what they do is, you know, you take your homemade salsa recipe, bring it to them, and they say, okay, well, we can have our people make it, and this is what it's going to cost, and we'll put it in the, you know, chop everything up and put it in the tub for you and get it to the shelf.
So right off the bat, it sounds like you were ahead of the game because you were already having a manufacturer, you were sourcing manufacturers to do this for you. I pictured you making these syrups in your kitchen and starting out that way.
It was after the first 22-quart batch of Orgeat spilled on our floor.
Yeah.
My wife and I decided that I would not be doing this at home.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually got started with scalability from day one.
Okay.
I knew that, you know, I could be running around making these syrups and then trying to sell them, but the time that it takes to make the syrups, plus trying to sell them, plus work my, you know, my bartending job so that I could earn some income, it wasn't all going to be feasible, particularly in the long run. So I, first thing I did is go to a co-packer, and we started running small kettles of syrup. Started off with the Orgeat, cinnamon, vanilla, and Dawn's mix. And, one of the reasons I went to a co-packer first, I knew I just wanted to spend my time marketing. The cooking is, it's a very important part. It's a teachable, learnable, and fairly simple part. We're making syrups. We're not making, you know, I don't know, what's complex, cakes.
I know what you're getting at, but I mean, like, I'm sure in the very beginning, those syrups were, I mean, like, what were those early ones like? Were they pretty good from the start, or did you have to make adjustments along the way?
Yeah, the only adjustments we had to make are I wanted to make sure that they were ready for the shelf and that they would be compatible. They would sit on the shelf for a long time. I see a lot of home ingredients or people just dipping their toes into the manufacturing world, and they try to keep them in refrigerated. Whereas I knew people aren't buying these from the refrigerated section; they're buying them off the shelf.
Right.
The dry shelf. So, put them through the rigorous testing through the Oregon Department of Agriculture, and we had to make little adjustments that ended up in the form of either a little bit of citric to bump up the acidity, or a little bit of xanthan gum to help against water activity. Okay. Great thing about using those is it wasn't like, oh my gosh, now these taste horrible. It was the tiniest amounts, and the citric, I find, just like putting lemon in a cocktail, kind of bursts every flavor, just kind of boosts everything else. I always think of citrus as kind of the salt of cocktails, because it helps bring everything out.
So, was there a learning curve, or were those adjustments small?
The adjustments were very small.
Okay.
Very minute amounts. And if there was a learning curve in anything, it would be everything else.
Okay. I guess what I'm getting at is. I guess what I'm getting at is that when you started this process, did you ever hit a point where you thought to yourself, what did I get myself into?
I think about that every day now. now I'm at a point where I'm supplying syrups for, the two Trader Sam's at the Disney Resorts, one of the Disney Resort, one Walt Disney World. I've got, bars up and down the coast that I'm supplying product to. And, on those days where you haven't made enough orgeat or you don't have enough stock and production isn't going to happen for another week, it's this balancing act of, oh my gosh, what am I doing? And we're working on a lot of issues that we've been having, making sure that the quality is right. We had a batch of orgeat go out that had, extra almond chunks in it, and every day I'd get an email, what is this stuff floating in here? The problem with using natural ingredients is people expect a little, they see the unnatural things, and moving from like a lower quality syrup, which is just pure flavoring and sugar water, into a high quality natural based, you suddenly start to see chunks or color variations that can cause a lot of confusion.
Right.
And
right.
I answer every one of those emails that comes in.
This episode is brought to you in part by Steadfast Pomade. Steadfast Pomade is a strong-holding, medium-bodied, water-based styling product for men and women, which leaves your hair looking slick, neat, and shiny with a clean, fresh scent. Its unique formula allows you to easily restyle your hair throughout the day and washes out with ease. Steadfast Pomade is American-made and veteran-owned. Available in original and anchor hold. Get yours today at steadfastpomade.com. Tame the waves and keep it steadfast. This episode is also sponsored by the Tiki Tea. Founded in 1961, the Tiki Tea is a family-owned and operated tropical drink bar practicing the lost art of exotic cocktail mixing. Come try their house specialty, the Ray's Mistake, a delicious concoction of botanic liqueurs, passion fruit, gin, and rum for only $6 on Wednesdays until 9 p.m. The Tiki Tea is located at 4427 Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood, California. For more information, check out their website, tiki-ti.com. The Tiki Tea, Ground Zero for tropical drinks.
Now, we had a question on the group page about syrups.
Yes.
And I don't know if you remember the question. And, you know, basically it's somebody that's asking us to take somebody through the process of making a few of the basic syrups at home. I mean, you know, I mean, as far as like, and this is what I do, and I feel like, you know, I'm a little intimidated to tell you, like, you know, some of the ways that I make syrup, but I always start with a simple, right, sugar and water, and then I essentially flavor that with whatever it is that I want to, you know, the flavor profile that I want to get out of that, right, whether that's passion fruit or anything else, right, and then I obviously try to use natural ingredients, you know, passion fruit, for example, you could use passion fruit pulp, right, and if I want to make any other kind of syrup, like, you know, like say a Don's mix, for example, it's basically what, cinnamon syrup with grapefruit juice, right? Or do I have that right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, cinnamon syrup, grapefruit juice.
Yeah. So, I mean, it seems pretty straightforward to me, but for the people that, you know, and I have to be honest, like, you know, when I first started doing this, obviously I was intimidated because I'd never done it before, but once you start doing it, you know, some of this, the basic ones seem simple enough. Could you tell some of the people out there maybe like some of the process of making a few of the basic ones?
Absolutely. You know, the first thing I have to say about, you know, making syrup is don't be too afraid. It's sugar, water, and something. You're not, you know, cutting off thousands of dollars of ingredients if you ruin a batch. You're just pouring something sticky down your sink. One of the ways that I got started is actually there was an Imbibe magazine article about making your own cocktail ingredients. I think it started with, you know, had a falernum and had an allspice dram that actually most of the contributors of that article I ended up being very good friends with.
Awesome.
So experimenting based on what other people are doing is a great way to start. And then you kind of get into your own. You start to think, well, what can I do to change this? What can I do to vary this? You know, I'll give you an example. One of the things that I do that not a lot of people do is I actually integrate my dry ingredients with flavors. So things like if I'm going to make an orgeat, I will integrate real almonds with the sugar so that it kind of draws, the sugar will draw the oils out of the almond. Okay. And then the sugar itself then starts to pick up that almond flavor. So you're not just kind of you know, throwing in some almonds last minute.
Yeah, that's
and hoping it pulls out flavor.
That's a different way of doing it. Okay.
Yeah. You know, passion fruit, there's, with passion fruit, number one, I learned that getting it directly from the fruit is very, 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 very difficult. You can, especially the little purple ones, you can get about 200 of those. You'll get about a half ounce of juice.
Oh, wow.
yeah. I'm exaggerating, but yeah, you get a very small quantity of juice.
That's I didn't know that.
When you're cooking it, yeah, when you're cooking it, you can passion fruit is very, very delicate, so you'll get a lot of passion fruits that get house-made passion fruits get a really bad burnt flavor to them. So in our process, the way I do my passion fruit, I start off with actually a concentrate. So it's already been through a little bit of processing, but it's nice. They get it right at the peak of season. They freeze it. It is as good as it's gonna get without a passion fruit tree next to the production facility.
Okay.
But we take that, we integrate that with the sugar, and then we start adding the water to weaken it. So really, I kind of do the opposite of a simple flavoring, and I try to make it flavoring first.
Yeah, so it sounds like you always combine with sugar first before you add the water.
Yeah, generally. Okay. Now, it depends on if if there is an oil that the base ingredient is going to contribute, using the sugar is a great way to start, because sugar will just suck the moisture out of anything.
Okay.
That's why you get like hard caked sugar after a while, because it sucked moisture out of the air and it started to turn into chunks.
So is this something you learned through trial and error, or is this something that you learned by just doing your research first?
Honestly, it was exposure. I had a friend who was doing vanilla sugar just for their own joy, and it smelled amazing. Because they would just chop up vanilla beans and throw them into sugar, and you know, within a few days, it smelled just amazing. The sugar contributed much more flavor to anything it was put in, and I thought, wow, what a great tool, what a great alternate idea of how to use sugar.
Yeah.
So I started bringing that into my, once I started making the cocktail syrups, I thought about that vanilla sugar. I was like, hey, that would be pretty cool. Let's try this out. What? You don't have to restrict yourself to just vanilla. That's oily, and the sugar will just pull it dry.
Yeah. Wow. I'm doing it backwards then, because like, for example, with the passion fruit, and I learned this from Ron Macesco, and it works really well for me. I'd make a simple syrup, and then I'd go down to the Hispanic grocery store, and you get the passion fruit pulp, and it's a Goya brand, right? And
yeah, that's the frozen stuff, right?
The frozen stuff, and because it's so hard to find passion fruit anywhere else out here, it's so weird to me that we don't have more passion fruit flavored things, or more passion fruit, So get the pulp. Actually, I add that to the simple that I have on the stove, and then I strain all of that, and that's how I get my passion fruit syrup.
That's probably pretty good, because you're adding it after the fact, so it's not getting as bad heat exposure.
Right. But I add it after the simple syrup has already been made, right? After the sugar's been dissolved and all of that. But I find it interesting, like how you add your flavors to the sugar first. I've never actually thought of that, and I'm going to start trying that.
Yeah, it's a fun thing to do, and the great thing is it's fun to experiment and to try new things. But one of the things I started off making, Dawn Mix, or what we call now Paradise Blend for fun rebranding purposes.
Okay.
I started to play around with ratios on like pink and white grapefruit, just trying different things. Does all white taste good? Does all pink or all red taste good? What if I blend them? What kind of blends and variations? What about, my orgeat uses brown sugar because I feel like it gets that richer flavor. Just playing around with things and, not sticking to one recipe just because that's the way it's, you think it's supposed to be. I've had some failed experiments, mostly to do with checking emails I'm cooking or getting too involved in a TV show. So that's where my dark ginger syrup came from, because it cooked a little too long.
Now, have you found that some of these flavors that you've developed, I know that you were coming from a cocktail-centric perspective. Have you found that some of these flavors that you've developed have become very popular for use in other things, such as, coffee is the easy one to think of, but, desserts or anything like that? Was there anything that surprised you with how people were using your syrups?
Salad.
Oh, wow. Salad. That surprises me.
Yeah, often people use, if you're making like a vinaigrette, a lot of paleo people will use, will put honey or something into it in order to sweeten and thicken. But we actually, I've seen people using, my lush grenadine as, because it's got a little bit of hibiscus and pomegranate, so it makes for a really nice vinaigrette over a salad that makes some of the flavors just kind of pop, adds a little fruitiness. I've seen lime cordial poured over fruit salad is actually pretty incredible.
Wow, that does sound good.
It adds a little bit of preservative in that the lime helps keep the fruit from browning. The citric in the lime keeps the fruit and browning, and the that just helps the sweetness and all the fruit pop by adding a little bit of lime cordial.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, of course, you know, orgeat in coffee is amazing. Although we've even seen tried an experiment with Don's mix. And, I mean, being into the tiki scene, you may see grapefruit and coffee and passion fruit and coffee mixed more often than you'd imagine. But dang, it tastes good.
I've never tried that. I'm going to have to try that now.
Yeah.
Have you ever considered
Falernum? Falernum is a barbecue sauce. Yeah, there's just so many things you can do because the syrups that you're making for cocktails are a sweetener and a flavor, so they can really add a lot to anything they go into.
Now, have you ever considered compiling all of those things into some kind of a recipe book?
Absolutely, I have. my spare time is, in order to write a book or put one together, is a little sparing right now. We have toddlers.
Right. You've got a couple of toddlers. Yeah. That I read a post that you are this close to getting away from doing diapers, right?
Oh, man.
Right? Wait till they're feeding themselves and dressing themselves, and you can skate away, man.
Yeah, I think I got about about 2.5-3 years till they're in school, and, if I'm getting done what I'm getting done now,
yeah,
I can't wait to see what's going to happen in 5 years.
Yeah, once you have more time. So, I mean,
and it's...
A recipe book sounds like it would be great to go with what you're doing.
Yeah, if there's any photographers or contributors, I'd love to see what people are doing with the syrup. So feel free to shoot me an email, Blair, B-L-A-I-R, at bgreynolds.com. You know, because one of the key things about if I were to do a recipe book is to kind of give a big thanks back to the community that this all came from. And I know how much people love seeing their stuff in print or seeing, I ran into the creator of the Reverb Kick.
Is it Kick the Reverb? If it's Kick the Reverb, that's Ron Masesco. That's the person that I mentioned that helped me out with that passion fruit syrup.
He's still so excited about winning that 2007 Tiki Central contest.
Right.
And it's a great drink. I completely understand.
It's a great drink. Yeah.
And I would love to see, not just hi, I'm Blair, the world's genius of tiki drinks. Enjoy these. But really, because all I am is a concentrated portion of the community, someone who just took a different step. I wouldn't be here without Falernum number 9 from Kaiser Penguin, reading up Rum Dude's blog and getting excited about blogging about just, hey, here's what I've been drinking.
Yeah.
Read about it.
Yeah. Well, that's
I stand on the shoulders of others.
Very cool of you to say, very humble of you to say. But I got to tell you, man, you've got the best syrups out there, in my opinion, and I know that I'm not the only one who feels that way. You've elevated the game with that, So,
I assure you it's entirely from selfish purposes. All I want is to have a great cocktail anywhere I go.
Yeah.
The best way I can do that is by supplying the ingredients.
Yeah. Well, it's good stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm trying to be respectful of your time. So before we wrap this up, what is the future of BG Reynolds?
The future of BG Reynolds is going to be just getting it into more places. We have kind of limited distribution right now, just working with a few very select, very high-end distributors. But the next step is to, we've already ramped up production. We're moving actually into a new facility this year, or by the end of the year. Which will actually 25 times our capacity for production.
Wow!
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
You're really growing then. That's pretty cool.
Oh yeah. And once we have all this, right now we're behind on orders, and the next step is to have more inventory than we have sales.
Yeah.
And then we got to build those sales and just get it into more places. Because that's one of the first things I hear is, I love your stuff. Where do I find it? How can I get it? How is it, you know, where can I go to get this stuff? So making it more convenient for people to get is kind of the next phase for BJ Reynolds. After that, big plans. I got big plans, but, you know, you got to go a step at a time.
Okay, so we can't talk about those big plans just yet?
You know, I don't really like to be the guy who announces a high dive and then belly flops.
Okay,
so,
okay.
I'll just leave it nice and big for now.
Okay, so we'll wait in anticipation then to see what happens.
Absolutely.
I know that you just said that people are always asking where they can get the syrups. If I wanted to get your syrups today, if anybody wanted to get your syrups today, where can they go?
Amazon.com. We've got a number of people, of distribution centers that are offering the syrups over Amazon. Of course, bgreynolds.com. And the great thing is, you order from there, my wife packs it and ships it to you. You might even get a few free swizzle sticks or something.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, and we offer, you know, if you sign up for the mailing list, we offer discounts every once in a while. Always happy to... I always like getting orders, too. It just makes me happy, and, we'll love seeing, the same customers that we've had for 8-plus years. Familiar names. Gosh, when you send one off to, somebody in Imagineering ordered our syrup. What?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I bet when you first got that Trader Sam's account, you were over the moon about that.
I didn't even think it was real at first. I got an email from @disney.com and thought, what?
Yeah, when I heard they were using your syrups, I was like, oh, man, that's awesome. Blair's got to be jazzed about that, man. That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty cool, yeah. I'm so happy for your success, Blair. And
thank you, Andrew.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and like I said, you make a great product. I wish I had more of it. Yeah, now your social media pages, can we put those out there for our listeners?
Absolutely. We've got @BGReynolds on Twitter and Instagram, BGReynolds PDX on Facebook. We do update those about twice a week. We're just getting our content engine rolling. So we've finally got an in-house photographer to start taking pictures of some recipes and start putting those out on the social media. So that'll be coming soon.
Cool. Hang on to those pictures for that new book.
Yeah. I'll garnish them for the book. We'll just put them without anything on social media. But to get it real special, you got to order the book.
Right, right. Very cool, man. Well, I appreciate you taking time out of your day, Blair. Thank you so much for talking to the podcast. And I hope to have something with your syrups soon. And I hope to hang out with you again soon. I didn't get to make it up there to TikiCon this year. I was originally supposed to go, and then the budget got cut from that. And then I saw you for a wink at Tiki Oasis.
Tiki Oasis was... I was there for a very short amount of time.
Oh, okay. Okay. You know, the thing about Tiki Oasis, it's so big that I'll see friends post pictures of all the stuff they did. You know, they'll post it on Facebook and Instagram and all that kind of stuff. And I didn't even see them all weekend, you know? And, so I thought it was just one of those
crazy,
kind of things.
Crazy fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I'll let you get back to your toddlers. And,
awesome, Adrian.
And you're almost
there,
buddy.
Thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
You're almost there, buddy.
Yeah,
like,
man, thank you.
Are they ready to let go of the diapers now? Or are you still doing a little bit of that?
We've got about 2 to 3 more months of having a lot of paper towels on hand, and then we'll be good.
There you go. All righty. Well, listeners, if you have any questions, comments, or just want to leave a shout out for Blair or BG Reynolds products, check them out on their social media pages. And you can also check us out on Instagram at Polynesian Pop. We have a group page on Facebook inside the Desert Oasis Room. Give him a shout out there too. If you have any questions about his syrups, I'm sure that he'd be happy to answer those for you. And thanks again, Blair.
Absolutely.
Cheers.
Thank you, Adrian.
Cheers and aloha.